welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and my big childhood contest victory was being a runner-up in the Nickelodeon Toy Run sweepstakes.
I'm Matthew Gatos, and I once won a Guitar Hero competition for a region, a district, I don't know. Yeah.
Regional Guitar Hero champion?
Yeah. I wish I was a kid when I won that.
I don't. My name is Marines, and I honestly thought that I had never won anything as a child. And I guess this isn't really winning anything, but one time I was selected to record the voice message that people heard when you called into the Broward County school system. I don't know. I was a good kid and they were like, you get to do this. And I recorded the "You're calling Broward County schools" message.
What a beautiful little nerd prize. I love it.
Thanks. Yeah.
And I'm Sari Riley, and my big childhood contest victory was also a competition. I used to play a lot of Pokemon trading card game, and I definitely beat people a lot older than me, and so I got gym badges and sets of cards.
This week we are actually re-recording our Xenon episode because we had some technological problems and we lost the episode. I was, however, able to save Sari guesses the plot to the next movie, so you will be hearing organically as it happened Sari's attempt at guessing the plot to the next movie. But first, to start us off, Mari is going to tell us how wrong Sari was last time with the plot synopsis to Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century.
Okay, it's me, and I will just say that mostly the cause of why we lost the last episode, but however, feel bad for me, there's a hurricane coming here. It has nothing to do with why we lost the audio, but things are very bad right now. Anyway, plot synopsis. We are in the future, so the year is 2049, and I swear we are not talking about space every week on purpose, but we are indeed in space again, specifically on a research space station where Xenon Carr and her family live. The first part of this movie is all about showing us what life is like on a space day. Can I call it a space day? Is that... I don't know if that was in the movie or where I came up with that, but it feels right. We see Xenon rushing around late to class, or doing some recycle bin diving for crafts, and generally being a little bit troublemaking, but like in a fun-loving way. For instance, she sneaks out of the space station in a spacesuit to see a solar flare from up close, and she gets caught, and her parents tell her that one more slip up and she's totally grounded, mostly because there are a couple of important things currently happening on the space station. Parker Wyndham, who is the head of Wyndham Corporation, the corporation who pays for the space station, is visiting to take a look around and see the progress and determine if the space day can stay open. Wyndham is also hosting the first ever rock concert in space, and Xenon's favorite band ever, Microbe, is coming to play. They are hosting a contest in which one lucky winner will get to dance on stage with the lead singer, Protozoa. His name is not important, except for that it's great because it's Protozoa. And Xenon makes a Protozoa sculpture with recycled parts, and she wins the contest. Meanwhile, Xenon also catches Wyndham's lackey, Lutz. His name is Lutz. I didn't make up a new term. Lackey, whose name is Lutz, break into the space station's main memory bank. She confronts him and manages to distract him a little, but is determined to keep her eyes on him. She goes as far as breaking into the memory bank herself and waiting to see what he will do. And Lutz gets in there and uses a sparkly round memory disk chip thing to upload something into the space station and leaves. On his way out, Lutz manages to drop the memory disk while he's trying to pocket it. And apparently he doesn't hear it like clink when it hits the floor. He's very bad at this. So he loses the memory disk. Unfortunately, Xenon wrote the door code, like the alarm code, on her palm, and she gets all sweaty because, you know, adventure and stuff, and she can't see it anymore. So she punches the wrong code into the door and sets off an alarm and gets caught. No one listens to Xenon's explanation of why she was in the memory bank, and no one believes that Lutz and Wyndham are up to no good. I mean, she does base a portion of this argument on the fact that Wyndham gives her, like, bad vibes, but also, you know, that's fair. Some people are just skeevy. Xenon's parents decide to ground her, but they mean literally ground her. She's going to Earth to spend some time with her Aunt Judy. Xenon can't believe it. She hasn't been on Earth in 8 years and has, of course, heard all kinds of bad stories about Earth. Xenon's best friend, Nebula, finds the lost memory disk and uses it to make Xenon a going-away present, a single earring. Xenon wears it and they have a tearful goodbye.
Would you be mad if a friend gave you the gift of a single earring?
Yes, because my ears aren't pierced, and so I'd be like, come on. I can't do anything
with
this.
Do you even know me?
Yeah.
Yeah, that screams like, hey, I found this on the ground. Here you go.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm cool enough or future enough to rock a single earring.
I am, but that's because I'm a future space ghost, so.
To be fair, I used to, definitely when I was like fifth, sixth grade, I was the cool kid with just his left ear pierced.
Oh my God, Matt. Of course. Yes. Good.
Yeah. And it was double pierced. I had two holes.
So you would be mad if somebody gave you a single earring too because you had two holes.
Yeah, I'm like, which one do I hang this in?
All right. Xenon catches a ride to Earth with Wyndham and Lutz, who are also returning. Once planetside, Xenon dramatically tells them that they don't fool her. But when she tucks her hair behind her ear, Lutz realizes that she has the memory disk. Xenon has kind of a hard time settling in because of gravity and allergies, which, yeah, man, being suddenly heavier and sneezier sounds not fun. She also has a run-in with the nearest mean girl, mostly because the nearest floppy-haired cute boy immediately sets his eyes on Xenon. Eventually, she befriends the staring boy, Greg, and his conveniently tech-savvy friend, Andrew. They help Xenon uncover what's really going on in the space day, meanwhile, while Lutz is, like, following her around town and ransacking Aunt Judy's house. Turns out Xenon's memory disk earring contains a virus that is slowly eating away at the space station and that will eventually cause it to crash, killing everyone on board. Wyndham Corp isn't as flush as it used to be, and they want to pull the plug on the project, but in an evil corporation kind of way. Xenon calls her parents to warn them, but they don't listen, even though we see that the space station is already starting to malfunction. Andrew creates an antivirus, but it has to be uploaded on the space station, so they all try to come up with a plan to get Xenon back, and finally remember that Microbe will be flying there soon. Xenon and friends break their way into Wyndham Corp, and Xenon appeals to Protozoa as his number one fan and contest winner. Aunt Judy realizes that Xenon is gone, and in trying to find her, also manages to alert Wyndham and Lutz to the fact that Xenon is on the shuttle with Microbe. Wyndham and Lutz and Judy all rush on as well, so now we are all going to space. Back on the space station, Xenon is still trying to convince people that the space station that is falling apart around them is falling apart around them. Wyndham is on hand to go, nuh-uh, so no one listens. Xenon is briefly locked away in a room, but her friends break her out just in time for her to rush to the memory bank and yell that she has the antivirus. She also has to enter a password, though, and she keeps getting it wrong. And I guess it's like the pressure of entering a password with a lot of people watching you. I don't know.
Wingdings. Just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the,
as a font.
Don't make your password wingdings because it's incredibly hard to remember.
Also that. With no seconds to spare, Xenon gets it right and the space station is saved. We end the movie with the concert in space in the best song in a movie ever, in which Xenon graciously passes her prize of dancing on stage to her best friend Nebula. The end.
I think there's like a lot more going on with this one this time. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just like very attached to these people. But Matt, where is this cast now?
Well, most of them just kind of kept on acting. So I didn't actually do as many people as I normally do in this segment because some of them were just like, yeah, they're still doing things. So if you want to look up the mom and dad and the Aunt Judy. They're just kind of, you know, actors. Starting off with Lutz the Lackey, played by Bob Bancroft. He's also still acting in a bunch of stuff, most notably to maybe us and some other people. He was in a few episodes of Parks and Rec. And he works at the accounting firm that Ben almost works at a few times.
Good. I was wondering who, because he seems to be pretty typecast as a lackey or the man with glasses in a suit.
Yes.
And so glad to see that he fulfills that role.
Yes, they pretty much kept him in that role in Parks and Rec. And he plays a guy who doesn't like Ben at first. But then Ben says something smart and he's like, ah, okay, I like you. We have Margie, who is the mean girl described earlier, played by Lauren Maltby. I immediately recognized her, and I wasn't sure why, but I looked it up, and she was in the Jonathan Taylor Thomas hit comedy, I'll Be Home for Christmas, where she plays his sister in that, where she's also kind of a mean girl at first, but comes around in the end. Did anyone else recognize her from that?
Yes.
Makes sense.
That it's tracks. Roughly as you would expect.
Yeah. But she is no longer acting, and she's actually now a psychologist.
Oh, cool. Oh.
Yeah. I feel like some other people we've talked about on this like podcast have also become psychologists in their now normal lives. And I'm like, oh, okay. From child star to psychologist.
Uh-huh. I'm sure there's something to like dig into and analyze there, but...
they can do that. I won't do that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Working our way up towards the stars of the film a little bit more, we have Greg, who is the dreamboat? I don't know.
He's a horse boy.
Yes, he is a groomer of horses, and I think, Mara, you had it right when you said he had his eyes on her, because that's, I think, the way he looks at her is just a little creepy all the time, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like dead behind the eyes, but just very laser focused on her.
Leave Greg alone.
There's just a point where like she blows him a kiss and he like waves kind of at her. but Greg is played by Gregory Smith, who you might also know from being in Everwood and Small Soldiers, but now is actually doing more directing on shows like Riverdale, The Flash, and Arrow.
Sari's gasp.
Yes. It was like a show that I recognized and a show that I'm trash for. Good old Greg.
So if you see any of the Riverdale boys doing acting just by like staring creepily at their love interests, you can know that that's Greg's influence.
That must be.
He's like, hey, this worked for me, kid.
This is how you be a dreamboat.
Yeah. Next up, we have Mr. Protozoa himself, Philip Reese. He is also still acting in a bunch of things. He's been in shows like 24, The Perfectionists, and Night Flyers. And I recognized him from an episode of Doctor Who, where he played River Song's husband.
Oh.
But he seems like he's just consistently acting in things that I've never watched, but people seem to like things on the Sci-Fi Channel. I don't know. I know that Night Flyers is a thing from like George R.R. Martin that I have not seen, but I didn't know if any of you guys have seen.
Oh, no, I have not. But yes, I am familiar with it, but I have not seen it myself.
Okay. Well, yes, he is in that. He is still doing it. And it seems to be very proud of his protozoa past, because his like Twitter and Instagram bio include like at the end of them, it's like, I'm an actor. Da, da, da. Zoom, zoom, zoom.
Oh, I'm so happy. Oh, yeah. That makes my heart so happy. Happy. Thank you.
There was also a very fun article that was like the headline of it was a little misleading, but it was the time protozoa was more famous than William effing Shakespeare. And I'm like,
what? What?
So it turned out that one time Philip Reese was like visiting William Shakespeare's like old house and was like taking a tour. And then all of a sudden a bunch of girls who were there on the tour were like, circling around him and being like, oh my God, are you protozoa?
Okay. Yeah.
So not necessarily more famous than William Shakespeare, but just in that moment, they cared about him.
Yes.
Maybe he wrote the headline.
It was me. Guys, I ghost wrote that article. Yeah.
You were one of those girls crowding around him.
Next up, we have Nebula, played by Raven Simone, who you know from just everything, probably.
Wait, Sari, did you recognize her?
I vaguely did, and I didn't want to look her up, but she's on a talk show, right? Like now as an adult?
Yeah, she has been on The View. Before Xenon, she was famous for like hanging with Mr. Cooper and The Cosby Show. And then After Xenon, she got well known for both, obviously, The View, but obviously she was on That's So Raven, which was her big hit jam. And she's a recurring role on Black-ish. And she's currently doing a show on Disney Channel called Raven's Home. That is like a reboot of That's So Raven, where she's the mom now. Huh. That I've never seen an episode of.
I did not know her from That's So Raven. I didn't know that existed. Mm. So,
wow.
This is how little, for anyone listening, like, I never clicked over to the Disney Channel. All Nickelodeon, all Cartoon Network.
I thought for sure, like, Raven Simone, you would know, Sari.
No, not really. Like, she looked vaguely familiar.
That's So Raven was a fun show. I cannot speak to its adult reboot, but watching Raven have her little visions, it was like a whole thing. I feel like there's a contemporary cultural moment almost that you're missing out on, because I feel like everybody knows the, like, she, when she had these visions, she would do this thing where she would stop and like turn towards the camera and stare at it while it zoomed in on her. And I feel like this is like a known thing.
Now I know.
Yeah, you've probably seen a gif of it at some point.
Yeah, yes, that's probably where I've seen her, which is probably why I recognize her. It's like some sort of gif or YouTube video if they did something funny on one of her talk shows or if she reacted.
And then we get to the all-important Xenon of it all. Xenon Carr, played by Kirsten Storms, which is just a cooler name somehow than Xenon Carr. She was on Days of Our Lives for a long time and then joined General Hospital in 2005 and has been there ever since. So she has a very steady acting gig. She has been on like over 1,200 episodes of General Hospital.
That's a lot. That's a really long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She has a very like cute, normal Instagram with like pictures of her daughter and her doing like knitting projects and mom memes. And it you go to her Instagram and it doesn't feel like a famous person. It just feels like that person you went to high school with.
I mean, if you want to have a relatively normal and stable life, but like still be an actor, like a working actor, a soap opera is 100% the way to go. Mm-hmm. Like it's, you have it, they are consistent. They run year round. So like the work is steady and, like your character, even if your character dies, your character can come back. If you get sick or you need to go on vacation, they can just bring in somebody else to play your character for a week. No one cares. Like, it's, you know, I love that for her.
There were a couple of soap operas that my sisters and I watched specifically on summer breaks throughout middle school and high school. And the one that we kept up with for the longest was Days of Our Lives. And so it was like a 1-2 punch of Kirsten Storms being on Xenon and then starring as Belle Black on Days of Our Lives. And we were just very excited.
And Nicole is definitely not wrong about the other actresses like playing the role, because I looked up how many people have played the character she plays on General Hospital, and it's like 8 different people since the inception of the character, which I think was like there was child actors playing this character before she took over as more like teen and adult role. But just since she took over in 2005, there have been 2 other actresses who have played that character like in the middle of her also playing that character.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally. The one soap opera that I did steadily watch was Passions, which if you were watching Days of Our Lives, you would have also probably seen Passions as they aired back to back. But Passions was only on for a couple years. And in that couple year span, all of the central characters were played by like 3 or 4 different actors at varying times over the course of their run. So yes, this is just a thing that they do. And everybody just accepts it. Like somebody, like a completely new human walks into the room and everyone's like, oh, Gwen, there you are.
Like, that's why I did not know this, because I didn't watch soap operas either. But this is amazing.
The other actors are like, there's one that played the role for like one episode in 2016 and then another episode in 2018. So like in between, Kirsten Storm was still playing that role. And then another like actor that played the role from 2011 to 2012. And so, yeah, there's just 3 different actresses playing this same role that just like, yeah, show up. Who cares? You're this person because we said your name out loud. So you're that person now.
Yep.
This makes the Greg switchover bit in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend even better. Because I can't do a podcast without making it about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, my great love.
But yeah, that's where they're all at. I'm glad that they all seem, you know, normal and happy and living their best lives.
Okay, so first things first, a nostalgia check. Do you remember watching this as a kid?
Yes, a lot. I think I might be proven wrong later, but I think this might be my most watched DCOM of all of these. Maybe only second to Smart House, which we'll get to eventually.
Yes, a lot as well. And it was definitely one of my favorites, as I mentioned, the whole like tie to soap operas, and this is Belle Black as starring as Xenon. So we were like all about it from the beginning, and I watched it every time it was on.
Yes, I also watched this a ton as a kid. It is probably my favorite DCOM. Again, maybe I will be proven wrong. Maybe we're going to get to something else, and I'm like, no, this is it. This is the one that I loved more than Xenon. But off the top of my head, I cannot think of a single DCOM that I loved more than this one. Okay, so did you guys like this movie? Pretend I've never asked you this question before.
Yes, Nicole, I did like this movie.
Matt and I were joking the other day that actually we're re-recording this to give Sari a chance to change her answer.
Spoiler alert.
And continue to be your friends.
Yeah. Sari, how did you feel about Xenon?
I still remain the same because it still, I'm sorry, I like, as Mari was saying, the ending song is the best song ever. I still can't remember it. I'm trying to think of it.
Sari, come on.
Yeah.
Sari! It's so and catchy.
Zoom, zoom, zoom.
Zoom, zoom, zoom.
Yeah, and this is after telling my partner that I was re-recording this episode, and so then she started singing it. I have still nowhere in my memory banks. So,
terrible.
I think it goes still under Halloween Town. I think Brink is my favorite so far. Then Halloween Town, and the science in this one, just the wackiness of it. I don't know. It knocks it down a notch in my heart.
Sari, you don't know what 2049 is going to be like.
It's true.
As far as scientific advancements. We might be able to float rats in anti-gravity goo.
Scientific advancements or lack thereof, because that's a really old spacesuit that she went out in. It's like, ooh, I don't know what we're going to send up to the space station. I guess like this old crap that we don't need anymore.
It's retro, Sari. It's vintage.
Didn't you hear? Wyndham Corp has no money.
Fair.
I will say that while I think that all of these critiques are completely wrong and that your opinion is invalid, I do think that this movie is deeply situated in like when it came out, because I think that the digital literacy of 10-year-olds now would make this a harder sell. To me, part of what I'm hearing in this complaint, like I think you are saying this coming from a place of, you know, like, you know, a lot about science. And so It was grating in that respect. But I also think there's a little bit of this is you being a few years younger than us, too. Like, I think that even when you were the same age that I was when I first watched this, you would have been able to look at this and see how dated it already was in that, you know, few years time. So I think like that is maybe also part of why this didn't land as well with you.
Yeah, and for sure I am like an adult watching this movie that is made for not adults, so that's a huge part of it too. But I agree with like the virus being a flash animation popping out and eating a hole through the computer. I'm pretty sure even young Sari would have been like, that's weird. That's not how that works.
Whereas young Muddy would have been like, what's a flash animation?
Yeah, young Matt would have assumed everything was fine with his computer unless there was a flash animation that showed a bug eating it. And I'm like, no. Yes, all the other signs point to virus, but I haven't yet seen a bug on my screen.
Everything looks fine. The computer isn't smoking or anything like that.
I definitely hear all of these complaints too. It's really funny. I was recently rewatching Firefly, and some of that stuff as I was rewatching it is the same, where, you know, like somebody in the past had to imagine what the future was. And it was weird because all of their like technology was super big and bulky. And I'm just like, oh no. So I get like seeing that stuff, but I don't know. The nostalgia is strong with this one. And I just think that it's very charming. I think that Xenon as a main character is like super charming and fun loving, and she's gets into, I don't know, the fun kind of scrapes and whatnot. And I think that that's a big part of it. And, you know, as even though Sari can't remember it, 99% of everyone else agrees that Zoom, Zoom, Zoom makes her heart go boom, boom is indeed a classic lyric that once in your head, you cannot get it out.
I think that might be part of it too. Adult me appreciated Xenon and all of her antics and her standing up against the man kind of behavior. But I think childhood me would have been appalled, and like nerdy, quiet me would have been like, oh, she would have been so obnoxious and annoying to be around. I wouldn't want to be her friend. like, you can't just crawl through air ducts like that, or she's just hiding away in things. And I can't put words into younger me's mouth, but it seems like she would have been too rebellious for me, in that I would have maybe thought she, like, this was cool for the adventure movie, but not like, I don't know, I wanted to be Ash Ketchum's best friend, and he wasn't that rebellious. He kind of did the right thing all the time.
It's funny because younger me strongly identified with Xenon. I saw her as like the cooler version of, you know, like what I would want to be. Also, big, I don't know, self-righteous, stubborn vibes that I connect to with Xenon. Like, she gets sent down to Earth and she's like, no, I'm still right. Like, I don't care that I'm being punished and I'm being told that I'm wrong. I know I'm right, and I will prove to you that I'm right one way or another. Like, I don't know, just like that sort of stubborn. I have mentioned before that I never really got in trouble as a kid. Like, my mom wasn't really big on punishments and stuff, but to the degree that I did, it was usually because I was asked to do something that I did not want to do, and I did not, I don't know, like, it wasn't justified to me in a way that I found acceptable. And so I ended up in like very, very long timeouts, and like timeouts that I could have ended by just doing the thing, but I wouldn't do the thing on principle. So for all of those reasons, Xenon, I'm like, yeah, I feel you.
I think for me, Xenon was a childhood crush. So I also had like that childhood nostalgia of anything that she, like, I don't think as a kid I would have been like, oh, she's doing the bad thing or she's breaking the rules. I would have been like, oh, she's so cool, I wish I could date Xenon.
You were Gregory.
Yeah, staring creepily at my TV with my eyes just laser focused.
Floppy hair or no?
Oh, definitely floppy hair. I remember like going to like a hair salon and being like, give me the JTT, please.
For all my poo-pooing on this movie, I did have fun. Like, I did like it in general. I just didn't like it as much as some other DCOMs that we've watched. All the slang was very hilarious, very good. I just like imagining all the writers in the writer's room being like, okay, how can we have slang on a space station that teens think is cool that's slightly different from Earth slang, so that when they try to talk to each other, it's a whole jumbled mess. And I don't know, very good.
Yeah, the making the two sets of slang, and like there's like a subtle little bit of world building in that to acknowledge that slang, which is very, you know, situated in like the moment in time, would be different on the space station than on Earth, because again, because the technology of the future is not great, so people are apparently not communicating with each other. So there's that piece of it. But yes, I agree. I liked that kind of piece of it, and it also that fed into one of my favorite things about this story, which is that it's also a fish out of water story for Xenon when she gets down to Earth, which I also really enjoyed.
You brought up a great point there, Nicole, of why don't they know the slang? Because clearly they are wired into like Earth culture, because they like microbe and they like protozoa.
Yeah, they have an Earth teacher.
Yeah, but so they should be able to pick, I guess they don't have future Twitter maybe to like see.
Right, there's no, this future only imagines necessary communication between,
yes,
you know, or some sort of advanced version of communication that already existed. So like TV, some, you know, somehow they're watching TV up on the space station and like that's it. But it hasn't, this is pre-social media. And so there's no social space between Earth and the space station.
I think a lot of futuristic movies do this where when they start to imagine a future and like what technology we would use, they assume that that is also going to sort of erase other technologies along the way. And so very rarely is there like text-based communication in future movies. It's a lot of like, well, if we have video calls, why would we ever email, or why would we ever send a letter, or why would we ever text message? Like text message doesn't exist in like doesn't exist in any futuristic movie pretty much. And I don't think they accounted for anxiety.
Here we all are with our like FaceTime on our phones. But fuck up, I'm ever going to FaceTime any of you. Like, ever. I will text you.
2019 or 2049, I don't give a fuck. You're texting me.
I'm texting.
Well, I think a lot of future media does this too, is that they take, you know, what exists and say, how will this exist in the future? But like Nicole mentioned, when this was written and when it aired, there wasn't really social media. So they did not invent it for the purpose of this media, you know, so there was no like projection forward of what would that mean. And so you did very much have like the isolated space station and then everything else on Earth. But I think that to that end, the slang was probably the thing that they did best. And I really liked it because they had like just the ridiculous, like the Zetus Lapidus, where it was completely made up. But then they had certain phrases that were just a little bit different. So instead of saying good morning, everybody walked around and were like, was said morning glorious. I don't know why that is different in the future, but I like it.
Viral was bad. What was the beautiful one?
Graphic.
Graphic is beautiful. Ew, Greg, you're being creepy again.
That weirdly, like, even though I think it sounds so wrong to our ears, if you think about it, like, go back 10, 20 years ago and try to use the word lit with someone.
Right.
Like, people use the word lit now. And just, like, walk up to somebody 20 years ago and say, like, oh, yeah, that's lit. They have no idea what you could possibly mean. So, like, it's realistic that we would take already existing words and reuse them to just mean something completely different. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to happen with graphic, because that seems like a weird shift.
Let's start it.
Yeah, you can make it happen right now. Use that social capital, Matt.
Oh, the sky today is graphic. Yeah.
Just make a viral tweet again.
No, that's bad, Sari.
Viral is bad.
Oh, this is my one other nitpick, though. After, see, I could say one good thing, and then I can say one bad thing to balance it out so that I don't lose my friendships completely.
Sari's no longer in this episode.
Yeah, we have recast Sari.
She's the audio
Sari.
We lost.
Yeah, this is actually the technical issue.
I lost the rest of your audio. I don't know.
You just got to do a dub of what I said. It's your best impression of me.
The hurricane went to Montana. Audio's gone.
Mm-hmm. R.I.P.
But just Sari's house, not mine and Nicole's.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Anyway, Sari, what's your other nitpick?
My one other nitpick is that of all the good things that they did, when Xenon said, the sky looks less massive in space, or something to that effect, when she's on Earth looking up at the sky with Greg, no, you live on a space station. There is space all around you. The space can't be more massive than that, than if you're looking up and ground is half of it, what you're seeing, and space is half of what you're seeing. That's all. I just must point out, as an adult, being a bully to this child.
Yeah, What I'm hearing right now is that you're bullying Xenon out of her experience, and it's rude. This week's group discussion topic is our favorite fictional space media. So inspired by this conversation about all the space things that Sari found disappointing, what are some other space stories, Sari, that don't upset you?
See, what's funny is that I'm going to say them and then the science is going to be all bad in them too.
Yep. I set you up.
Yes. Set me up for failure to embarrass me for saying bad things about this movie. So, like Mari said, Firefly was really important to me growing up. I just really wanted to be Kaylee so badly. She got to wear a jumpsuit. She got to do stuff with the engine. She was happy. She got to wear a dress one time. she's a more complicated character than that. But apparently her fashion choices were what I like stand out to me now thinking back. I also watched a lot of Doctor Who in junior high. My friends got into it first and introduced me to it with the David Tennant run of it, I guess. And I don't know, we would talk about it all the time. And I liked the idea of jumping around in space and time and that stuff. And we decorated one of my friend's lockers like a TARDIS, and she uploaded it to Tumblr, and it became one of those things that got like ripped out and then posted to Reddit and then ripped out and then posted to Facebook, and went weirdly viral with no credit of just my friends decorated my locker as a TARDIS. And it wasn't even the best job. It's a weird bit of internet fame before I was publicly on the internet, because sometimes I still see it just pop up randomly if people are talking about Doctor Who. And it's like, yep, eighth grade Sari did that. did that bad construction paperwork, and apparently the internet still cares.
For me, I realized like a theme in trying to think of like space based movies / futuristic kind of movies that I really wanted to go to space. I wanted to be an astronaut, but I didn't want to do any of the work.
Right. Yes.
I didn't want to go into the sciences. I didn't want to go into the Air Force. I didn't want to do any of these things that traditionally astronauts do to become astronauts. So like movies that stick out to me that I would watch and go like, oh, I could be an astronaut, were things like Rocket Man, where Harlan Williams randomly gets chosen to just be an astronaut and be one of the first people on Mars for some reason. or even more weird and somehow plausible in the movie scenario is the movie Space Camp, where it's an 80s film. Joaquin Phoenix is in it as a little child, and basically these teenagers go to a space camp, and during an engine test they accidentally get shot into space.
Classic. you know
like you do when you go to space camp. Whoops, we're in space now.
This also makes me think of Armageddon, which is another sort of like people who like why like the movie contrives a really bizarre reason for this group.
We
of
need
people
oil
to be,
drillers in yeah. space. We can't teach astronauts how to drill. We need to teach drillers how to be astronauts.
Right. It'll be much easier to teach the oil drillers how to be astronauts.
That's all Bruce Willis says.
Matt, if ever they need people who work in YouTube in space, you're it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Not famous people who work on YouTube. Just average Joe.
You are it.
You have to stumble into a Galaxy Quest type of situation where it's just like someone comes up to you asking for help and you're like, I guess so. But I guess they were famous too in the premise of that movie. So someone.
Oh, and I also need to be part of like a space show.
Yeah.
Because they were part of a space show that people thought were real. So they'd made them astronauts. So mm-hmm. I need to work that maybe if I talk about being a space ghost enough.
Yeah. Right. You need to make like a space YouTube show, right? Then that's like the futuristic version of this, right? Is then it's a web series.
Yeah. If I make like a fake vlog where I'm like on the space station, eventually someone will have to obviously come to me and go, we need your help.
Right.
On the space station.
Aliens will find you eventually if you start this web series.
I mean, it also just reminds me of like whatever how many years ago when it was announced that Lance Bass was going to go to space because he had enough money to. Like, they were opening up space tourism and Lance Bass was apparently one of the first people to buy a ticket. I don't think he ever got to go, but that the fact that Lance Bass could go to space made me believe that I could go to space too.
Yeah, you just need to become super rich. So either you start a web series or you become super rich, mm-hmm. whichever one's easier.
I could be the Chris Kirkpatrick of a boy band. Like, I don't need to be the JT. I could just stand in the back and have weird hair.
That's your new Twitter bio.
A future Chris Kirkpatrick.
Mm-hmm. For me, I guess the one that stood out to me in terms of childhood media was definitely Space Jam. I remember being in elementary school when this came out and it was a big freaking deal. And also I watched it a lot and I haven't rewatched it since being an adult. And I don't know that I will, because I would like to preserve the magic in my memory and the perfect storm of this movie of coming together with like a sports star and being like a giant commercial for the NBA and Warner Brothers at the same time, and being like half animated, but with Michael Jordan. Never again will we see basically this combination of ingredients in a movie. And I loved it. I loved it a lot.
They're going to try like next year. I think they're trying to make Space Jam 2 happen.
I don't know. I feel like this has been, they keep saying that it's going to happen. I mean, I support it, but I'll wait to see. Also, this happened so out of order. I feel like I am traveling through space and time, because when we originally recorded this episode, I mentioned Firefly as well, talking about how I really loved that show. And then I rewatched it and I did not remember that it was probably in my head because I thought I talked about it when we talked about Xenon. So I just finished doing a rewatch of the like 13 or 14 episodes that exist. So it's not like very time intensive. So with this so fresh in my memory, but also because I already said this, but now I am saying it again, Firefly is one of my favorite TV shows. Yeah, Joss Whedon continues to prove that he's not like the best person ever, but Firefly really holds up against like rewatching and stuff, even if some of the technology stuff dates itself. But for me, it's not because it's like space cowboys, but because it's found family in space. I love Firefly and I periodically rewatch it just to give me all the warm fuzzies.
So I also, yes, love Firefly, but my sort of childhood answer is connected to that in my mind, which is Space Cases. And I'm also realizing now that when we recorded this originally, none of you had ever heard of it, but now we can't. Like, that's, you've now heard of it because we talked about it already.
I immediately forgot, and okay, I still don't really understand what it is.
So Space Cases was a Canadian show that aired on Nickelodeon. It is very tied to Firefly in my mind because as soon as I saw Jewel State, I was so excited because Jewel State was also on Space Cases, which was like, it's, there's not a ton of similarities between these two shows, but it's also like a found family in space. It's a bunch of kids on this spaceship going on, you know, weird little missions and stuff. And Jewel State's character had beautiful rainbow hair. Whatever you're picturing, if you haven't seen this show, you're probably not picturing it correctly. So you should Google it and you should see the rainbow rings that were on her hair. It was everything I wanted as a third grader. And I just really loved this show. And it is one of those things that like nobody remembers this show. I now understand why it got canceled, because apparently nobody else was watching it. It was just me. But but I really, really loved this show. I actually also went back and looked up our first Firefly recap, and indeed when Jewel State first shows up in the first episode, I made a point of including a picture of her as Catalina on Space Cases. So I will link that in the show notes. And now it is time to share all of the lessons that we learned from watching Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century. Matt.
We touched on it a bit earlier, but the lesson I learned from this is that you don't need to worry about adopting or learning new technology, because even in 2049, they'll still be using computers from 1998.
The lesson I learned was pointed out by people, not me, but I'm adopting it. So don't set your password in Wingdings.
The lesson I learned is don't write secret codes on your hands if they get sweaty, or at least on the palms, because like you can write arms, inside of sleeves, anywhere else on your body, but just not the sweaty palms.
Wait, inside of sleeves?
Or like...
Oh, long sleeves.
Long sleeves, yes.
Gotcha.
Sorry, not like turn your shirt inside out and write them there.
I was also picturing like short sleeve t-shirts and like writing up like almost on your shoulder, your like to-do list.
I mean, you could. You could peek down there a little bit. Are you fixing your bra strap? No, I'm looking at my to-do list.
The lesson that I learned is that girly crafty stuff can also help you save the world or the space station or whatever the heck Xenon saved. But the point is that bit at the end where she uses nail polish. I don't really know why she needed nail polish. Doesn't matter. Point is she used nail polish to make a bunch of extra little shiny discs in order to trick Lutz. And I was like, that's great. Like, I love that they relied on something like that, that they were able to incorporate that as part of how she saved the world. So that's my lesson from Xenon. And now it's time for Sari to guess the plot of the next movie that we are watching, 1999's Can of Worms.
Oh, God.
That is not a lot to go on.
Yep.
It is not a lot to go on. It is very similar to You Lucky Dog, but even less so because I don't think a worm is going to be a sidekick in this movie. So obviously, Can of Worms is like you're opening a can of worms and there is a problem because of it. So like, there's this giant secret that's revealed. My first thought was actually like The Sandwich and Brink, my favorite DCOM movie. It's great. I'll evangelize for it. I'm being like, ooh, the worms are going to come back. So I'm going to lean into that. We're back in the universe of Brink with that science lab. Fast forward 20 years. And those worms in that tank have been hit by some mutant X-rays or something. What science would they be in? Gamma radiation, because the Hulk existed. And those worms become sentient beings or like an invasive species on the Earth. And the scientists have been studying them in a lab or something like that. And then a canister breaks and the worms escape. And you've got like a very dramatic shot of the worms like squiggling around on the ground. And then animated worms like boring through the walls of the thing, of the institute. And then some scientists said, oh, guess we opened a can of worms here. And so the plot of the movie, so there is a government agency, like some sort of, the military has got to get involved, where there's worms on the loose, and they're going to burrow into people's brains and turn them into zombies. Let's say that's what these worms do. Or just like invade the agriculture. Worms are going to be bad for this world. But really, it's the kids that save the day because it's a DCOM. So there are these kids who are just like normally in a science lab and they like digging in the ground. I don't know. Maybe they're farmer children. We'll go with that because of agriculture. They love fishing. So they're really good at digging worms out of the ground and like tossing them into the water, reeling them in. I don't know what else you'd use worms for. I've really dug myself into a hole here.
Just like a worm.
Yeah. And so these kids see what the adults can't, and they learn that these super worms have a weakness, which is they're all lured into candy or something like that. Now I'm just mixing up the plots of three movies. Can we do the phone a friend thing?
Yes.
Actually, does this count? Can I have the tagline?
It doesn't really change where you're going, but the tagline for this movie is, who's got time to be a teenager when you have to save the world?
Oh, okay. So I'm like all 100% in on this now. Okay, so I wish it gave me a little bit about their method for saving the world instead of just generic save the world, though. But let's say that these teenagers, so they're slightly older than I was picturing them, amended. Teenage farmers, very good at fishing, very good at catching worms. They've developed in their own like farm lab, because they're science-y, the perfect worm food. And then they realize that if they irradiate this worm food, then it's perfect for these super worms. And so they like set up a trap to gather all the super worms to one place. And then, I don't know if it's like explode them. Is that, that's like a Disney, it'll be comic. There'll be slime everywhere. And and that's it. Then the scientists who had the super worms are going to be like, ah, shucks, we've got to be more careful with our science experiments. And the kids are like, well, we saved the world. You're welcome. And then they get medals of honor from the U.S. government for saving the world from a threat that most of the world didn't even realize was a thing.
Wow. That yes. is quite a journey. Now that you're done, I would like you to look at this poster for this movie because I've been staring at it
yeah.
while you were telling me all of this, and it's just deeply unsettling. I hate this poster. I don't know, more than I've hated any single image in a really long time. So
yeah, I truly hate this. And I guess that worm thing is something that you could get when blasted by camera radiation, but it looks more like a snail than a worm. The human mouth, really, I don't like.
Yeah.
The human mouth and the human teeth are what is most distressing about this mm-hmm. image.
Maybe this is what happens when a worm infects a human. It turns into this.
Oh,
this
no.
is the zombie person.
Well, find out next time if there's gamma radiation and worms when we watch Can of Worms. Thank you all for listening to Cooler Than Homework. If you are enjoying this podcast, we would love it if you could rate and review us in Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or share it with your friends. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on SnarkSquad.com, or you can find us all on Twitter. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name is Marines.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
Thank you, as always, to Stefan Chin for the theme music that is playing us out right now, and we will see you all again next time.
Cool. Yay. We did it.
Again.